Hi. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 19th, 1996. In the fireside room this morning, our speakers are Jeff and Emily Kirsten-Greep. Today, they will be beginning their series on communication and gender. Today's session number is 1 and is titled, Doing Masculinity and Femininity in America. Let's listen in.
Jeff Kirsten-Greep, and I am one half of the two people who are teaching this class. Please come in, find space on the floor, wherever you'd like to be, at the back.
Or we can grab chairs.
Along the table.
There's some chairs up here, too.
You've given us an inordinate amount of space up here. We don't actually need that much.
We could back up.
So, and we want to welcome you to a week-long, I don't know if you want to call it a course or what you want to call it, on communication and gender, which is different than talking in bed. That's a different sort of thing. And we'll make that distinction clearer today as we start. So I want to do just a few things today, starting with we'll tell you a little bit about us, tell you a little bit about what to expect this week and what to expect today, and then we want to hear from you for the better part of a week. Each of the sessions will be self-contained, so if you just come to one or two, you'll have your adrenaline rush for the day, and then that's fine. You don't have to come to several sessions to get the little endorphins to go off in your brain. As I said, my name is Jeff Kirsten-Greep. It's only three syllables, but the hyphen really throws people off. Our friends call us the KGs because that's easier. We lived here the winter of 92, the year after our marriage, which was an experience. It's a pretty intense place to have your first 5 years of marriage in a year. I'm right now teaching at the University of Washington. I've been teaching at the collegiate level, believe it or not, for 12 years. I started when I was 16. Say that each time. And I teach in the field of speech communication, which may not seem like a field that would be interested, especially in gender. But speech communication is, as you'll notice as the week goes on, has a lot to do with identity and not just about using language as sort of a tool. So I don't know what else you want to know. I guess anything else you'd want to know about me, you could just approach and ask, because we're all in the same community and we can't really get away from each other for a week. So anything you want to know, feel free to ask.
Okay. I'm Emily Kirsten-Greep, and I'm a social worker. Thank you. I'm a social worker in Tacoma, Washington. I work with, right now, I've worked with an agency called First Place for Children for 5.5 years in a variety of roles. The one right now I'm filling is called a Family Support Specialist. I work with families where abuse or neglect has happened with children. I work with teen parents, and you know, what does that have to do with gender? And I think it has a lot to do with gender. I think that the roles that we live out and the roles we live out and the roles we play make a really big difference in terms of how we raise our children and our families. And so those are all real important questions to me, and questions we'll be talking about this week too. So I think that's all I need to say in the introduction. But I think what I do want to add is that given our backgrounds, we've got, you know, a teacher, a social worker, we have our own experiences, but as Jeff mentioned before, these sessions really are going to be as much for us about listening as they are about talking. The first couple of sessions we're going to be giving some information, but we're always going to be expecting a lot of feedback and a lot of information coming from you, from your own resources and knowledge. I know there are people here who probably know as much, if not more, about this subject than we do.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. And we're hoping that you'll, everybody will feel free to join in and share on in all of that so that we learn. We want to know what you know, and we want to be sure everybody gets a chance to be heard. Okay.
Let me tell you about the week. We have 5 sessions planned, and today is going to be, we're going to introduce you to notions of masculinity and femininity. Femininity. We'll stumble over that word quite a bit. And as Emily said, the week is going to build in sort of a logical way. The first 2 or 3 days are going to be about what we know about these kinds of things and what you know about these kinds of things. And the last 2 sessions are going to be more about, okay, given these understandings about how we lead gendered lives, what are the implications for how we are in the world and with each other? So how do we do and be as Christians in a gendered society? And then how do we raise our children in a gendered society? So the last two sessions are going to be a lot more, we'll come in and ask you, so how should we raise our kids? And sort of see what you have to say. The sessions that we've got planned today, of course, doing masculinity and femininity in America, we want to ask you about how you learn to be who you are, and you'll be talking to some of the people around you. Tomorrow we're going to talk about words making the woman, or words make the man. We like the phrase, clothes make the man, you remember that phrase? And that the notion that language isn't just something that we use, that language is also something that uses us. Some people describe language as something we're born into, as a fish is born into water. And that a fish can't just sort of grab some water and use it, you're just stuck in it. And that it, in some ways, directs where we can go. So we're going to play with that notion on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. Wednesday is the class most of you are probably expecting today, which is to talk about how men and women reliably communicate with one another, and some of the things we do to each other, and how that plays out in our relationships with each other. Thursday is the day we'll talk about how to do and be in a gendered society, and Friday we'll talk about raising kids, how you do that. Please come in and find a space just wherever. We'll be moving around quite a bit, so you'll have lots of time to do that.
Wednesday's myth day, is that what you're saying?
Wednesday would be myth day, Neil. Yeah. Today what we're doing is giving you a little overview here. Emily's going to do the disabusing you of the notion that you're here for a sex class, and then we're going to get you talking to one another about some notions of being masculine, being feminine. I'd like to start, though, at least what we'd like you to do to begin here would be to introduce yourself to people within touching distance. We actually wanted to have people say their names, except that there's so many of you that I think what you ought to do is just make sure the people around you know your names. So if you do that, just introduce yourselves and smile at the people that are near you.
Oh, I'm going to add something really quickly, and that's just that Jeff and I have never, we've been married, but we've never taught anyone together. We've never taught a class together, so this is a really new experience. We have really different styles. I'm used to teaching teenagers, and which is a very different style from here, too. So go ahead and watch us. We'd actually love to hear feedback on what you think.
Yeah, we're also raising a daughter, our first child. She's almost three. We've had her for 5 months. We got her at Kmart. No. In a month, she'll be ours. But we may look like parents of a three-year-old. We're actually parents of a five-month-old, and we don't know her history. So if you want to treat us as sort of you want to look at Tori and see how we are with her, I mean, maybe that'll lead to some very questionable conclusions on your part, because we're just sort of figuring that game out. You know, we look at her and look at each other and scratch our heads quite a bit. So. I wanted to give you some reasons why you ought to be here. And four came to mind when we were talking. Four things that we think you can benefit from thinking about communication and gender. One of which is just to recognize how influenced our gender is by our culture and by how we talk to each other day to day. I'm not sitting on Emily's lap, you notice, as we talk. Why not? Well, we can think about that, you know, later. There's something about that that just is apparently not appropriate, so I'm not doing it. It's things we do minute to minute, and our gender isn't this immutable stone that we carry around with us, that it's really changeable. And hopefully that realization will come to you as we talk about this stuff. Second, I think it's important to notice that if you talk about communication and gender and how they work together, it'll make you a more effective communicator with other people. You'll recognize some of the ways you may be heard that aren't ways you intend to be heard. And that's something that can help. Third, I think it might expand your styles and flexibility in communicating. It'll make it easier for you to talk to and deal with people who maybe aren't much like you. And as Christians, I don't know if we're called to do that or not. And fourth, we have this little phrase we like, sticks and stones can break your bones and names can also hurt you. That this is about how our ideas about gender have actual physical consequences for people in society. And that we're not just talking about words here, we're talking about the people in our lives and how the ways those people are named by us and by other people impacts those people, sometimes in physical ways. Maybe gay bashing is probably the most overt sign, but also domestic abuse and child abuse and just all kinds of things. The way we treat each other sexually has a lot to do with how we picture our genders. So we think with those four reasons, we've given you a pretty good reason to be here. For some of the sessions this week, we hope you'll come as often as you like. and that you'll participate as freely as you are able.
Thanks.
Sure.
Okay. I have to stand up.
Anybody want my chair?
Yeah. Do people need chairs? We can. Oh, and there's another one back there. Are there people standing who'd like to sit? Are you? Okay. All right. I'm just going to talk for a few minutes, 5 to 10, hopefully 5, but sometimes I talk more than I mean to, about sex and gender and why those are different, you know, how we're going to be talking about them this week, why they're different, and why we think it's important that we distinguish those two things right away. First, sex. I mean, sex is sex, but the way we're going to talk about it is that sex is a biological thing. It has to do with your genitalia. Do you have a penis or a vagina? Do you have 2 X chromosomes, an X and a Y? There are certainly people who can talk about those things biologically, as there are a lot of variations within that. I mean, there are people with XXY and things like that. But for us, we're going to just say that this is a biological thing, and it's separate from gender, and what we want to talk about this week is gender. Because we believe that although your sexual being can influence your behavior, it doesn't determine it, and it's not the key factor. We believe that gender is that, and we want to talk about that this week. And so there are 4 points I wanted to make about gender. One is that gender is a social construction. It's something we agree on as a society, as a culture. We negotiate it with each other. It's how we treat each other day to day. It's built into our social structure. So it isn't sort of an immutable thing. It's actually a negotiated thing, and it changes. It varies between cultures. Probably the most, the things people maybe have heard about most is like Margaret Mead, when she did her studies in New Guinea. I mean, there were, or as the culture there, where the roles of the 2 different sexes is very different than here. Men are the nurturing people within those relationships. Women tend to be the more sort of aggressive people. So in a different culture, what we view as the norm and as how femininity is and masculinity is just not true. So we need to recognize that it varies across cultures. The other thing is that it varies within cultures. Right here in our own culture, some of us who are a little older probably even recognize that what it means to be feminine has changed quite a bit, even in our own lifetimes, and what it means to be masculine has changed. Big line that is, and an example I like, is that pre-industrial revolution here in the United States, when we were much more an agrarian sort of economy, families worked together. The men and the women both worked on the farm. They both worked in a business. The whole family worked together. And so some of the qualities of being industrious, being a hard worker, being physically strong, but also being nurturing and caring and able to care for children, were things that were shared across the genders. You would want a partner, whether you were male or female, who was strong, who was industrious, who was a hard worker, but also who could nurture and help care for the children, because those roles were more shared. And so even within our own culture, that's something that's changed and not the too distant past. And so I think it's important to remember it changes. So we can make changes. We can think about it and be conscious about it. Finally, I think a point we want to keep in mind is that in our society anyway, we've really taken the male and female role and we've sort of drawn a line straight, or not male and female, I'm sorry, masculine and feminine roles, and we've drawn this line straight down the middle, and we say, I mean, part of how we even define it is, if this is masculine, then it isn't feminine. And if this is a feminine thing, then it's not masculine. And we've just really dichotomized it. We've made it a very separate thing. And again, in other cultures, in Native American cultures, there are Native American societies that recognize more than 2 genders. And sometimes often the people who were in the more mixed sort of gender space were the most revered and respected within that culture. So I think it's real important for us to recognize that we've really drawn a line, and I think at least I, as the week goes on, will be talking about how damaging I think that is, and I think Wes probably is that. I didn't get to go to the meeting, but I think there are other people who will be able to talk about that too, that by creating a dichotomy, we create some real damaging things too. So we're distinguishing it just because sex is not going to be, it can influence our behavior, but it doesn't determine it. So it's important to make a separation there. So that's why we wanted to define it. I forgot to say before I started, we're not going to talk about this. You know, we just got done saying we wanted to hear from you. And we're not going to hear from you today about this. Sorry, we need to get some other things done. And also on Thursday night, there's going to be a forum where this is going to be a topic. And we'd encourage you to come to that if you want to. But I want this to be in your head. We wanted you to be have this as sort of a base so you know what we're talking about and how we're defining it. And also to help sort of inform how you're thinking about things as we go along today. Next, we're going to let you start talking just about something a little different.
I mean, you've met these people now, so you're not
right.
Scared of the people around you.
You've talked to the people right near you, right? What we want to do is have you talk in smaller groups about what it means to be masculine and feminine in our society, or for you, just for you. And I'm going to split the room in half, probably right about there. Okay, sort of between you two. You're gonna have to. I know it's like
no.
But just sort of maybe a line to the door. And what I'd like to do is ask this half of the room to be masculinity, and this will be femininity. And if you're not comfortable being on one of those sides, feel free to switch. If you don't want to talk about femininity, you'd rather talk about masculinity because you have some ideas or thoughts on that, feel free to move. And once you get there, break into real small groups, like three people. And what I want you to look at and talk about and come up with are five characteristics or things that, sort of what is it that makes you feminine? What are the essential things? What are the things in our society that you really have to be feminine? What makes you, well, masculine in this, or masculine in this one and feminine over here. But what are the five things that you do? Once you do that, you're not going to have to just do a report back to the group. What we're going to be doing then is talking about it to, well, giving you the right answer.
Yeah, we'll give you the right answer.
No, but what we want you to do is have a chance to talk to each other, to talk about your own experience, talk about, you know, maybe where those ideas came from, all of that, to help us put it all together afterward. Is that, do you want to add?
Sure. I always want to add.
I know.
I thought what I'd do, or what we'd do, is then we'd have, we're going to cite some research that really did just what we're doing here with a lot more people. And said, what do you think it means to be masculine? What does it mean to be feminine? And we'll give you those lists. And then based on your discussions with your new compadres and the understandings you brought with you, just ask you to respond to those lists, and we can start the conversation. We're going to start a lot more conversations than we're going to finish this week. And our goal really is to just send you out if you're talking to one another and maybe to take them back together. What?
Well, I'm just thinking of a whole lot of us are family and couples sitting next to each other. Would it be a good idea to mix up more, or is that not a? I mean, we talk to each other all the time.
Well, some of you do.
She was. I had to restate for the person who's needing the microphone. She was wondering if couples should split up, so if they've already talked to each other about it a lot, and I think that's a good idea, I think, to get some new, fresh insight and ideas, and yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Get away from that, mate. That sounds great.
To do that.
So which side of the room is this?
This is masculine, the right side, and this is feminine.
Masculine is the right side. If you want to talk about masculinity, come over here.
And if you want to talk about femininity, come over here, and I need you to know this.
We're going to do this until 10 after the hour, and then we'll come back for the correct answers, okay?
And we'll
be here. Yeah, I'm going to do the same on the feminine side. And we just want to get your responses to these lists, conversations from your own experiences. What do you think about? Is this actually what being masculine and feminine, not what we'd like it to be, but is this what it is now in society? So first, the biggest thing about being masculine is you don't be female. There's a lot more room within femininity. There are a lot of ways to be femininity. There are relatively fewer ways to be masculine. And that if you don't do something that's traditionally masculine, then you're really kind of out. And in it. So that's one. The second one is to be successful, and that the goal we're here for being masculine is really to be envied, not to be liked. It starts to appear in kids' games, and that there's a lot of talk about men being success objects. Women are sex objects, and men are success objects. We have a friend who left here a few years ago. We spent the winter with him, and it took him a long time to find a job. And the first question people would invariably ask about him or ask to him when they would see him was, found a job? Mm-hmm. How you doing? You got a job yet? You know, not, are you happy? Yes. Got a job? Because it's important to be successful. Third, it's important to be aggressive, that you need to retaliate to protect your rights, that that's an important part of being masculine, and that if you don't retaliate, you are not masculine. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Start over.
First one is don't be female. Second one is be successful, be envied, and not liked, and be a success object. Third one is to be aggressive. And so if you don't stand up for yourself and for your rights, you're not considered masculine. That sort of puts you out of the masculine camp. Fourth, be sexual. If you're a male, if you're masculine, you're expected to be ready for sex all the time, and dang it, you better perform. So that in a way, this turns men into sex objects as well, and then it's not really a matter of choice. You have to do it as part of the masculine ritual. And, you know, I have to be ready for sex all the time, and if I pretend that I'm not part of that group. Kind of curious what you think about this. And this one, this is a biggie for me. Be self-reliant, confident, independent, autonomous. We have a friend, his initials are John Tellickson, and we talk about him. Because whenever there are suitcases to be carried, John will insist on carrying all of them, even if they aren't his. So you go up the hill, and he'll have like two boxes on his head, a suitcase, and a backpack on him, and everything. He wants to help with that. No, I'm fine, I can do it. So in that way, John, who is in this room, a real nice illustration of this. So this is one, and the reason I give you dates is that these are the studies from which we're taking these lists. This is the list from 1989, so maybe times have changed.
Well, it's 1489.
Well, and just in defense of John, it's also a three-year-old characteristic. Our daughter thinks she ought to be able to carry everything. It's incredible. It's your childlike quality. Okay, being feminine. I think a lot of these will resonate with women in the room. Appearance still matters. We like to think it doesn't, but they did some studies with kids, and you got to be pretty, you got to be slim, you got to be well-dressed. They did a study with children between third grade and 12th grade and said, if you woke up tomorrow and you were to the boys, if you were a woman or a girl, and to the girls, if you woke up tomorrow and you were a boy, what would be different? Everybody, starting at 9 years old, said that if you were a woman, you wanted, if you were a boy and you were going to be turned into a girl, you sure wanted to be pretty. Because that was really important if you wanted people to take you seriously, and the girls too. So that's, I mean, we start young, we teach our, you know, our little girls get makeup kits, and, you know, our appearance matters, and that's still there. Be sensitive and caring. We're the caretakers for society. We take care of the children, we take care of the elderly, we're the social workers, we're frequently the teachers, we're the people who do the caretaking. We also are the people who are allowed to express our feelings more openly. We're more expressive, we're more able to do those sorts of things. The next one is one that's pretty important to me because I work with children who are abused and women who've been abused. Built into our cultural views is that being a woman makes you being feminine makes you vulnerable to violence, and it's just part of being feminine in our society. And we'll talk more about that as the week goes on, and we can talk more about it now if we want. But and the fact that this negative treatment by others is also internalized. I mean, it's internalized by men as well as by women, and so that's just one of those things.
Can I interject one thing?
Yeah.
Was it a UN report or a UNICEF report earlier? I think it was UN or maybe even Amnesty. One of the international human rights organizations released a report within the last year on treatment of women around the globe, and talked about that it's pretty much universal that women are treated much more poorly than men, economically, physically, in a lot of different ways.
So, okay, the next one is an emerging one, and that's the that you need to be a superwoman. And it kind of went from you can have it all to sort of now you must have it all. You now have to have a career, you have to be a mom, you have to be able to do all these things, even though studies still show that 80% of women still do the majority of house, you know, home care, home things. They still are getting out into the workforce. So that it's taking a real physical and psychological toll on women, and that's getting more and more documented as we go. And the final one that in some ways contradicts it all, but is something that's been found in the studies, is that there isn't a single definition anymore. And I think that's what Jeff was referring to when he said, you know, that masculine is a little more narrow. The other thing that I think is really interesting is that there's one study that looked at being masculine. There isn't one study that looked at what it meant to be feminine. These are pulled out of a lot of different places. It came out of a, it's somebody who wrote a book in 1994 put this together, but there wasn't one given study. So it's coming from a lot of places. But the main things about that one that I think is important is that a woman who's assertive and ambitious at work could, you know, is going to be viewed with approval by some people, by with disapproval by other people, with curiosity by others, as well as a woman who chooses to stay home is going to be criticized by some people, envied by some people, and just completely disregarded by others. So it's a real confusing, you know, there are a lot of roles for women, but how we look at those are still pretty mixed up. So Jeff's going to facilitate this next part because that's one of Jeff's major gifts. But those are what's been said, and now we want to hear from you.
This is probably enough to start a conversation for the week, just to go out with the ideas you've gotten in your groups and this one, and just to sort of sit around coffee and sort of look at everybody with these masculine, feminine glasses and try and figure out who's what for the rest of the week, what you are. So what are your responses to this? I don't know whether you want to talk about the masculine side or the feminine side. Let's just hear from people. And I appreciate if you'd address each other. That would be the nice thing to do.
Okay. Well, first thing, I had a question. This is for you, though, really.
Oh, okay.
You talked about the difference between sex and gender, and I always thought that there was a big influence on gender based upon the male and female hormones. And as people get older, they tend to lose their hormone levels, and they change a little bit. I mean, they actually kind of merge a little bit. So the reason isn't there, I mean, you can't say there's sex and there's gender, can you?
No, the line isn't that clear. And one of the things I could say is that boys are socialized to deal with our hormones in ways that are different than how women are socialized to deal with theirs. And I guess we can talk more about this maybe in a different context. But that you're right to say that there isn't a really clean line between sex and gender. The reason we made a clean line was that a lot of people will say, oh, well, you are what you are. You act the way you act because you have a penis. So of course you do this. You're a man. You act this way. And we just want to sort of argue the other end of that and say, we really negotiate this with each other, culturally and even minute by minute, how we do it. So I'd like to continue that conversation with you. Go ahead.
Well, one here that we have talked about, and that's you just brought up, is men are just physically bigger overall. I mean, 3 or 4 inches taller and more massive, and they use that, or we use that as part of our regimen.
Mm-hmm. All men?
No, I mean it's an overall thing, and you can be trained one way or the other. But you know, I physically can carry usually more than most women can. I love those 10 suitcases. First name's John, though.
Thank you. Other responses? John?
Two quick ones. Interesting that you said there is no single meaning for feminine anymore. Mm-hmm. And yet, so it's easier to say masculine is narrowly defined, and yet, if we're not sure anymore what it means to be feminine, and the first one up there is don't be female. It's also the reason for Robert Bly and a lot of the men's groups now, because it's also getting blurry how we avoid being female. Second thing, just an example of the gender mix, what it means to throw like a girl here. Guys have to get more athletic. We accept that. In Tanzania, The little boys play soccer. The little girls play this wicked game of dodgeball with this little string ball wrapped around plastic bags, and they just huck it at each other from, you know, closest from me to you. And the girls there have really good arms, and the guys don't know how to throw. And so to throw like a girl there is completely different, opposite from here. Even though, you know, sure, the guys might be bigger, stronger, whatever, they're socialized into different abilities.
Sure. It's an interesting issue that came up in our group, you know, from several different angles. It doesn't appear to be, maybe it's implied in the feminine number two, to be sensitive and caring, but it's different attitudes towards relationships themselves, whether it's conflict in relationships or what you want out of relationships. And in our group, we had pretty clear agreement that feminine means to care about the relationship, to have things work in the relationship, to enjoy relationships, to get to the depth of who we are more easily, and that to be masculine, to be more aggressive in relationships, to win, to lie if necessary, to come out on top of facts. You know, that life is more of a battle and a trial and competition than it is an agreement and collaboration.
That's a nice forecast of Wednesday in here. It is. Yeah. One shorthand way of talking about it is men play to win, women play to avoid losing. That's one way to talk about it. And another is that women do relational work. That it's sort of expected that Emily's going to take care of our relationship, you know, in a traditional view. And that I can sort of blithely go along until she says, hey, deal with this. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Russ.
Right?
I don't know. Maybe it is. These are the right answers, after all. What other responses do you have to this or to the discussions you had? You don't have to be tied to this list.
Well, one thing we talked about, like emotions, it's okay for women to show their emotions much more so than the man.
Still?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Mm-hmm. Talked about, who was that, the politician?
Pat Schroeder.
Yeah, Pat Schroeder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But not be successful.
Yeah, but not be
successful.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering if there aren't more ways of being feminine because of number three, that there's so many negative attitudes toward women. So women try all these variations trying to get around this negative sort of hostility. And we all have our own ways of either, you know, saying, okay, I'll be that way and be perfect, or I'm not going to do that at all. I'm going to be something else, you know.
I'm not going to be feminine at all?
Yeah, I'm going to be something, I'm going to be strong and masculine. I'll be like them, or...
Mm-hmm. We were talking about that in our group as well, and the difference between years ago, several years ago, when Archie Bunker type thing.
Yeah.
Right, but now it's Roseanne.
Exactly.
Oh, she's taking over
the same role.
Yeah.
Nice point. Where did you learn these? Where did you learn to be masculine and be feminine?
At home.
Can you call up examples?
Leave it to Beaver.
Well, so what happened? What did your parents say or do?
I think it was just the way they acted as opposed to say or did.
You have an example?
My father was the breadwinner and my mother stayed home.
And that was normal? The neighbors didn't talk about them as freaks? Can you believe it? He's got a job.
And she was perfectly happy doing what she was doing. She was not.
So you saw happy parents in what we would now call traditional roles, male as a breadwinner, female home, nurturing, taking care of the family and the kids.
I learned a lot of it at school.
From?
Not from my parents so much, but from my peers.
Can you think of examples?
You know, you want to be liked by boys, and so you try and be the sort of girl boys would like.
And what sort of girl is that when you're in, say, junior high school?
You try and be real pretty, and you try and be... agreeable to the things they say. We try and agree with their opinions. So they don't mind having you around. Because they still don't like you yet, because they're boys and they don't like you.
Oh, no. That was terrible, I remember, to find out that most of the men in the room probably had this experience when some of your guy friends found out that you were sweet on a girl, maybe she was sweet on you too. And oh, that was terrible if they found out.
Whereas the girl gets complimented by her friends.
Yeah, yeah, right. There you go. Where else did you learn to be masculine, feminine? Where else did you learn?
Well, this is parents, but it sort of amazes me now because my mother really has come a long, long, long way. But she actually said to me, you know, the men really like to be in charge. And so, you know, sometimes you can get them to do some things, or you might have a better idea, but you need to kind of make them think that they thought it up. And she said that. Those were practically her direct changes. And so a lot of it, for me, was not real subtle. You know, she'd say, well, that's not a good idea because they want to do this, you know. And she doesn't really operate like that anymore, but...
So nice, you know, some of the things that we talk about as stereotypically not powerful behavior, not powerful ways of being with each other, like that might be, if you actually see her in action with a man, trying to get something she wants with her spouse or whomever, and it might not look very powerful, but lo and behold, what she wants is what she gets, and that we need to look maybe at some of the ways that each of these styles is both enabling and constraining. That what is... If I adhere to being masculine, what does that get me?
A lot.
Yeah, it gets me a lot. How do you get ahead in business? Be masculine, right? You got to be assertive. There's no hemming and hawing and sort of jumping up for coffee in the middle of the meeting if you're the chairman of the board. Oh, can I refill that for you? You know, you don't run off and do that. But that's not really acceptable. But it's more okay to be masculine than it is to be feminine if you're going to get ahead in business. That's one of the ways being this kind of masculine is enabling. What's the way that being feminine is enabling this notion of femininity? What freedom does it give you?
Make more choices.
Such as? Choices about what, excuse me?
I think just how you see yourself. I mean, like we were talking earlier, there's just more room to maneuver.
That is nice. When you have such a broad definition of being feminine, it's pretty easy. Masculine, boy, we're pretty tentative in these situations. Most of the guys I know go to a party in a new place and we kind of watch to, you know, be sure we're not going to do anything really out of line and sort of be stereotyped as something we'd rather not be stereotyped as.
I think physical being is also important, especially as a young child. I was big in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. I was much bigger than any boy. And that was not a good thing.
Really? Did that impact how you acted? Were you very feminine to compensate?
I don't think so. I actually did the opposite, I think.
Okay.
It was a great boy.
But it was very, I was large. I was. I felt awkward and it was very difficult for me.
By contrast, I was small. I was under 5 feet tall until I was a senior in high school. So I was really, you know, like, my nickname was Squeaky. I was this big. And I grew about 6 inches in a year and scared most of my friends. It really changed my life. It changed how I thought of myself as a man. I suppose I think myself as an old boy at that time. Go ahead.
I think the church has influenced how we look at male and female. I mean, all we have to do is look at some of the art.
Example?
I mean, Mary, demure, in her little blue outfit and white, and her head bowed and her eyes downcast.
Nice point.
A pretty smile, a beatific smile.
Oh, yes.
If you transpose Mary's face onto the figure of one of those World War II Rosie Riveter posters, have you ever seen anything like that? You know, here's Mary with Jesus in one hand and a hammer in the other hand. See that.
I think Jesus just getting closer to that whole story it certainly throws some of this into a different light and try to understand Jesus as a masculine person. And for me, it's been interesting to think of him as washing people's feet, of getting up and pouring coffee and doing the thing. He reversed the roles in out the culture, and that's been always a challenging, interesting thing for me.
We thought about asking you whether Jesus was masculine or feminine. And later in the week, we're going to ask you whether you think Jesus calls us to be masculine or feminine. So just a couple things to think about. There are a couple other responses in the air there.
Well, growing up in this society and coming of age really in the 1960s and 1970s, I really responded to number four. Because I grew up in a household where my father worked and my mother worked, and my mother basically ran the whole shebang. My father was a breadwinner, but my mother was in control. And she was superwoman. But I learned a lot from magazines, you know, from just the media, from all of those images of who women were becoming. And I had the sense, even quite young, that the way has been forged. This is your destiny. Now women are really supposed to move forward and do all of these things. And it's like, if you didn't want to do it, that's too bad, because, you know, other women really bled to create this for you, and now we need to move into this.
We should be grateful,
so,
damn
that's
it.
That's right, we should be grateful because the way has been forged. And so that was like this other sense of responsibility. Not only did you have to figure out how to grow up, you had to figure out what you were going to do. And it wasn't going to be at all like, the whole world had changed between my sister, who's 5 years older than I am, and me. And it's very different dynamic of what the expectations were.
Still, with you and your sister?
Still, the mental expectations of our lives are very different.
Thank you.
Can I pass in a thing?
Yeah.
That just reminded me. I remember really clearly growing up the ad, she can bring home the bacon, fry it up in the pan, and still let him know he's a man. Remember that? There was this real sexy woman in a suit with a frying pan. It was just like, I don't think I can do all of that. It was pretty scary.
Another thing on the superwoman.
We got about 5 minutes left, by the way.
I'm a lawyer, and we've been hiring many more women over the last 25 years. And they work their way up to become partners, and then they quit. And the difficulty is now half the people in law school are women. And we got all these women that come to work, do a great job, are wonderful lawyers, they make them partners, and then they quit because they're able to quit. Because somebody, either they inherited some money or married to somebody that's got enough money, they've shown they can do it. So they've sort of done what expected of them, but they don't really like doing it. And so they don't keep doing it. And then the younger women that are coming up complain because they don't have the mentors that they expected to have. And so then we're supposed to be a bad place to work because all these women have quit. But they quit. I mean, I quit if I could afford it.
Thank you.
Go
ahead. Yeah, just one thing on your question you asked, how did we learn to be masculine or feminine? And I think one thing we have to recognize, or I think we should recognize, is that, you know, we think, we remember, we feel all through chemical reactions, and our chemistry is different, and that, so there is a nature portion of that, meaning women communicate using both sides of their brains, and nobody taught them how to do that. Nobody taught me to communicate from one side of my brain. I mean, that's something that happened. One of the people in our group and has kids, another one is teachers, and they automatically saw kids reacting in different ways, and so it's not necessarily something, how did we learn to be that? I mean, some of it is programmed in our chemistry.
You might be challenged by some of the stuff we're going to talk about tomorrow. And that we think of languages and communication as kind of an artifact of this immutable body chemistry that we have, a makeup. I don't mean this in a bad sense of challenge, like, come on, buddy, come on, be aggressive here, come on. But that there is also some medical research that reverses the notion, studying especially identical twins and looking for differences in the sort of communicative lives they've had and what sort of physical things you can expect based on the quality of communication you've had in your life. So I'm not willing to concede that point. Just yet, although along with you, I think this is really valid, that it's not right to say it's all nurture and not at all nature. You had your hand up for a while.
Yeah. It seems to me like part of our problem is that we've accepted the masculine definition of what is desirable in life. You made the point that being masculine gets you something good, it makes you successful. That is necessarily desirable.
But you had business.
It gets you ahead in business, but is that really a desirable trait? I mean, maybe there are other modes of life which have a lot happier ending, which come out of the feminine side. But somehow we've adopted this masculine definition of what's desirable.
I like that as a preview of what's going to happen later this week, too, that those are, a lot of you seem to be itching to get to the question of what are we called to do and be. And I think that's a great thing to do. I'm gonna wind it up just so we can not run out of tape for the tape ministers as we go. What?
We gotta go get kids.
We gotta go get kids.
See, the feminine side remembers.
We just gotta get done.
Or marriage forces you into one or the other role.
It'd be great to think about these for tomorrow. What we're gonna talk about tomorrow is some of the stuff, how language feeds these notions. And not even how people use language, but language itself. And how that sort of sets this up. And that these both enable and constrain, that might be a fun thing to think about for a day. What does being this way get you?
and where does it keep you from getting? And do you want to get to those places or not? So thanks for coming. Come to some more if you're interested.
And the only other thing, yeah, we're obviously around, and we would love to continue conversations. So.
With you.
Yeah.